Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Off the Rails right here on A Cast of the Past. Now, these are the episodes where instead of focusing on one specific video game or movie, we sort of catch up on what we've been watching, experiencing. Most recently, we talked about Avengers Endgame between Ryan McNulty and myself, Juan Velez, but Keith Poshuk from London, Ontario, he was not able to join that episode, so he's going to let us know how does he feel about that movie now that it's been a couple of weeks, a couple of months after that. Plus, we had All Elite Wrestling with their Double or Nothing pay-per-view. We're talking about professional wrestling, and Jon Moxley, the former Dean Ambrose, had a lot to say on Talk is Jericho, and then Keith is hooked on Stardew Valley. We're going to maybe cover Detective Pikachu and Phonics. On Phonics. That is such a thing that I always saw the commercials for, but I never saw them.
What is Phonics, anyway? Is it like a learning tool?
I think so.
Well, it was meant to be like learning to read, I think. A method of teaching people to read by correlating sounds with letters or groups of letters in an alphabetic writing system. There you go.
So is phonics like the original text-to-speech then?
Maybe.
I don't know. I think it was just a language thing.
And just figure those little things out? Because I really don't know. I always saw the commercials, but aside from that, Keith.
Yes.
You're the Avengers guy. You love some of the Avengers and like
I do love those Marvel movies. Not a big fan of the DCs, but I do like those Marvel movies. And I finally got to see Avengers Endgame. It took me 2 weeks because apparently these days, if there's any big movie that you don't pre-order tickets for, you got to go to a matinee on a Friday afternoon in order to go see it. Now, that's nothing against matinees because I actually had a really good time going to that. Like, it was an empty theater, and because it's 2 o'clock on a Tuesday, everybody's still working. But finally saw Avengers, really enjoyed it. I think the best note I can say about it is that the fact that it was a 3-hour movie that did not feel like a 3-hour movie, and that's really a feat in itself. I enjoyed the pace of it, how it wasn't all action, it wasn't all comedy, it was a nice mix of everything. I was going into that movie excited to see what they would do with Thanos. Boy, what a roller coaster that was going into that one, and I enjoyed it. I thought the action scene at the very end was a great culmination of the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, how you finally got that big battle of every superhero working together, that giant battle with everybody that they kind of did in Infinity War, but here they went all the way with it. I loved it. I was like a little kid watching that and seeing all the superheroes interact together. I loved the conclusion of it. I know there's been a lot of flack, like, oh, okay, it was too predictable that Captain America and Iron Man and all those guys were going to be out of the MCU at the end of this movie. Hey, spoilers, I guess. Sorry about that. But anyway, you should go see the movie now.
It's been a couple of weeks. It's okay.
It's predictable, but I don't see that as a bad thing because they found a way to do it that left it open-ended. Like, yes, Tony Stark, super dead. Not much you can do about that. But with Captain America, they left it in a way that, like, oh, you don't actually know what the aftershocks of what Steve Rogers did by messing up the timeline, what those will actually be. So it leaves room for interpretation going in to this new phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I like it. I like it in the way that, yes, this is the end of this part of it, but now we're moving on to the new thing. And it gives the new thing a blank slate for the most part that they can still connect things into it. And yeah, overall, I would say that Endgame, it's made a lot of money, and I think it deserves every cent that it's gotten so far. I loved that movie. Better than Infinity War, I would say. Maybe. It's different. It's a different movie. There's aspect of it I like more than Infinity War. The fact that they pulled off Fat Thor, and it was amazing.
It was really
deserves
good.
Points just for that.
Yeah, it was a good movie, but I'm excited to see now what they do because we're posting this just before E3, and they finally revealed that we are going to be getting an Avengers game. So we're going to have Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, which is a sequel to a long-standing series that came out on the GameCube, like just that generation. But then we are going to have an Avengers game, but they haven't really released a lot of information about it as far as, is that going to be tied to the movies, or is it going to be like the Marvel game where it's just the characters, but it's not really about that. I am excited because the fact that we're getting two different kind of games, and with the other one being exclusive to the Switch, gives us a chance to maybe have a more exploration-based game, because these are Crystal Dynamics. I mean, we're talking about a company that does great storytelling and gameplay, so I'm looking forward to perhaps something that is more action-oriented, but not necessarily in the top-down view Diablo-esque way, but more so more like a really action-packed Tomb Raider where you can shoot and fly, because that seems fun. But
I like shooting and flying.
That would always be good, but kind of talking about shooting and flying, I'm not sure if that's the transition, but All Elite Wrestling. So the three of us, I always got to bring it up for this, we did do a wrestling podcast called Buy That for many years. Keith is actually still part of a wrestling podcast called The Six Pack Challenge. You can check that out. And
available every week on iTunes.
And there you go, extensively talking about this, which is All Elite Wrestling, a company founded by, I was going to call it the Starbucks. I don't know. The Young Bucks. Good sponsorship opportunity, though. But you have Kenny Omega,
no,
Chris Jericho.
It's not. It's terrible.
No, it's not the same thing at all. But I did have a chance to watch Double or Nothing, and then want Ryan's reaction to the Jon Moxley interview, which you did check out, mm-hmm. Ryan, right?
Yes, and I will say, as far as Double or Nothing, I'm slowly, very slowly making my way through it. So I saw the pre-show. So I'm just going to comment on the pre-show. Coming from somebody who is not super familiar right now with what's going on the indies, I think the pre-show left me with a lot of questions. Now, I'm going to assume Double or Nothing because, you know, they... AEW's got their TV deal coming up soon, and that's where they're probably going to rope in their casual fans and stuff like that. And AEW is probably meant to be more of a love letter to like hardcore wrestling fans. Because if I was a new fan or someone unfamiliar, the pre-show would have not sold me on this show.
When it was a little rough.
Yeah, because yeah. Looking at that Battle Royal, I'm like, okay... Like this dude with his hands in his pockets, like it's kind of it's
I knew you guys were gonna come after me.
You know why? Because you guys know, you guys are in on the joke, but that's what I'm saying. Like someone coming in is just gonna be like, this is stupid. You got a guy with baby oil. You got like a friggin' 12-year-old in there. I don't know where that kid came from.
Are you calling Luchasaurus stupid? Luchasaurus is 65 million years old. He deserves much more respect.
I was not talking about Luchasaurus. I was talking about the little kid that was in the ring at one point. And then
he's like, not even a little kid. He's just really short.
Yeah, and then all respect to the guy with no legs, but if we're trying, like... It was a little too much like bells and whistles going on for me to take it seriously. And then I saw that backstage segment where, again, coming from someone who's unfamiliar, someone who comes off, and believe me, like I know I don't understand the indies because I'm not privy to it, but someone who comes off like a Bayley ripoff, and then you have two... like librarian people shushing each other, and the commentators like, this is what happens when you have two librarians. I felt like I was watching a bad WWE segment. So I've heard nothing but great things about the actual show itself. Like I said, I'm slowly making my way through. But if I was someone just knowing nothing who just wanted to check out some wrestling, this pre-show would have definitely not sold me.
Yeah, for me, I think that the pre-show was bad on a production level. I think it was okay on the Battle Royale side of things. They tried to be creative, like I get it, you know, instead of having one guy come out of it, you know, in a 1 minute burst or something, they had a group of them. But I feel like that's really bad if you want to present new characters, and at the same time
also the dude
that
with
you know,
the cigarette,
like Billy
they
Gunn.
Messed the shot up on that, because
they
you see a guy light up
very bad.
You see a guy light up a cigarette, and then the next thing you know, you see him like freaking out with a cigarette on him. You're like, this guy's just a complete moron.
So the pre-show was not the best. I think that the main show was excellent. Personally, I thought that the opening match, which featured SoCal Uncensored, you know, Frankie Kazarian, Scorpio Sky, Christopher Daniels, and the other team, I thought that that was the best opening match because it was my kind of pacing where I really thought that they did a lot of high flying stuff, but they weren't just doing flippy stuff. Like they weren't overdoing it. Overall, I think that it makes sense that you have your Hangman Page becoming number one contender. He's going to face Chris Jericho, who beat Kenny Omega. Not a big fan of Chris Jericho's finisher. There's no way you can sell me on that. Maybe that back elbow into a Codebreaker would be a good combination because you get the guy all groggy and then you finish him off with that.
Is he just tired of hitting his back to do the Codebreaker at this point?
See, you'd think that, but he did like six lion salts in that match, so I don't understand.
yeah, but what I really wanted to say here, because this is not a full show review, is that I think people need to get off this high horse of it's AEW and WWE is going to die. Like, that is, hey, guess what? There is this little company called Total Nonstop Action that literally tried to have that attitude and they died because Impact Wrestling is not owned by the same company. So guess what? Don't do that. Just promote. If you love AEW and the roster, because they don't even have a show yet, right? So you can't say you love this show in AEW. It was their first show, and we're going to have one in July, title match in August. So I'm very excited for that. But we're maybe going to talk about this on and off the rails or bonus stuff. Like, we'll figure it out down the line. But regardless, just enjoy the show for what it is. And if you don't like WWE, guess what? Don't bring it up. Use the AEW hashtags, not WWE, which leads us to a quick reaction on the Jon Moxley interview that happened on Talk is Jericho. So Jon Moxley, former Dean Ambrose of The Shield, arguably one of the most popular factions of all time, especially within the last couple of years with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. He was on Talk is Jericho, where now they're both in the same company, and he had a lot to say about things that fans have always speculated on for years, about the way that the creative things happen behind the scenes. We know wrestling is scripted, but to the extent that it's scripted and how that actually takes an emotional toll on superstars. And we've always had your Wade Kellers or Dave Meltzers talk about the behind the scenes, but you hear wrestlers, even Seth Rollins a couple of weeks ago, shooting down the fact that WWE is overly scripted, yet literally couple of weeks after, here comes Jon Moxley saying, yeah, that's pretty much it. And Vince McMahon is the ultimate manipulator. Kicking it off with Ryan, what was your reaction when you heard this? That we've heard it for years, but it's the first time we hear somebody that literally left just like 2 months ago, and here he is talking about that.
Yeah, the timing of it was pretty crazy that his contract finishes up and then he's showing up on AEW, then he's on Jericho doing a podcast. So he really timed just creating a huge buzz around his name at really the perfect moment. And pretty much like you said, it was just enjoyable to listen to as a way to just kind of validate all these speculations you've had for so many years about why this show is a complete mess. But it did give us a greater peek into maybe not so much it is on the writers or the wrestlers, and it really all comes down to one man, and Vince McMahon maybe doesn't have what the same intuition that he used to have, and the show is really suffering for it. I mean, I remember hearing a former writer from WWE like maybe 5 years ago talk about, he would always say, all the writers, when we have those meetings, every great idea you've probably ever thought of is getting pitched at those meetings. It's just being filtered through one 70 plus year old man. And that's so true. And everything Dean Ambrose said only further validates that. And I think probably one of the best things he said, and maybe explains why wrestlers' characters just don't really come to life as much as they used to, is he said everyone's kind of in self-preservation mode, where they're spending so much time trying to get embarrassing lines out of their scripts that they don't really have time to really look forward and think about the direction of their character or how they want to portray it, because they're doing everything they can just to make themselves not look like complete morons on national television.
It's true, and it does validate some of the feelings that we have as wrestling fans and remind you that some of these people are human as well and have those exact same feelings. The thing that really stood out to me, even though it was a quick part, I think it was only even one line, these feelings that Moxley had go all the way back to that failed storyline with Brock Lesnar back in the day where everybody really thought this sucked and he was there feeling the exact same thing. And it just kind of goes to show that, yeah, it's all being filtered through one person, and maybe, just maybe, it's time to change.
No, one thing that really just hit the nail on the head for me as a wrestling fan, being able to get in the head of the wrestler, he talked about how one day he was listening to like a Freddie Mercury, you know, Queen song, just like live concerts, and seeing how, you know, the band is the creative freedom. Like, they have the creative freedom to create an entire experience.
They're expressing their art.
Exactly. Yeah. They're expressing their art. And he mentioned, like, so here we are. We're hired for our talents, right? We're the wrestlers with the promos and the wrestling matches. But then here comes a writer who adds another filter. But then ultimately, here comes the ultimate filter in Vince McMahon. So you're kind of just left with, like this generic, basic wrestler that maybe has all the talent in the world. And that's got to be really draining for somebody that has killed their bodies for years in the independent scenes for $20, $50. Here, they finally make all the money in the world, but then that creative freedom gets taken away. And I think it goes to show something, like, he didn't even look at the new contract he was offered because there is no money down there that could really persuade him to stay. So for everybody listening and watching, we're not a wrestling podcast here, but remember, you can check out Keith's six-pack challenge on all podcast platforms.
I go into
platforms.
Much more depth in our latest episode, or I guess not our latest episode, two episodes ago at this point.
Yeah, a couple episodes ago, but if you would like us to talk about this every couple of weeks or months or something, we can figure something out, but wrestling fandom passion still is inside of us. Maybe not Ryan, but maybe Keith and me.
Yeah. I'm still a little broken.
Ryan's still going over that lost period of when we just stopped watching WWE. But let's talk about Detective Pikachu, because that also happened a couple of weeks ago. And two-thirds of the podcast had a chance
will
to experience it.
Will you be spoiling things? Am I going to?
No, we will not spoil.
And honestly, I don't think there's a lot to spoil. I feel okay. Like
there's a couple key moments that I thought were amazing.
Which are bullcrap. But let's not say that. Just Ryan, overall impressions about finally having Pokemon be simulated, you know, in the big screen, where something like Sonic got pushed back because, you know, they tried to put Sonic on the big screen. They weren't happy with that. Were you happy with how the Pokemon look?
Yes, that was the best part of the movie, to be honest. The story itself is nothing special. So if you took Pokemon out of this movie, it would not be that great of a movie. But the Pokemon just bring this movie to life. I mean, like, nothing made me smile more than just like the opening shot. You just see the sky and then some birds fly in and you realize that they're like Pidgeys and Pidgeotos. And you're just like, yes, like you're just seeing a world that is inhabited by Pokemon. And I thought they did a very good job with the first live action outing. And I thought it was very smart for them to basically, they came up with this whole Rhyme City concept as a way to kind of get away from the games a little bit and just tell a story with Pokemon just in the world. So, like, I can just quickly go into, like, the thing with Rhyme City that makes it different than other places in the world of Pokemon is just that, basically, Pokemon live alongside humans, so there's no Pokeballs or anything like that, and so they're free to just kind of live amongst the people. So it's great in concept because you're not going over the whole battling and trainers and gyms and all that, but you're also being able to show off tons of Pokemon at once by, like, not having them all trapped in Pokeballs when you're in a town or anything. So it was kind of a smart on two reasons for doing it. And Ryan Reynolds did an amazing job of really carrying this movie from a performance standpoint. And it's just really fun. If you love Pokemon, you're going to love this movie.
Yeah, I feel like this is a fairly solid movie for people of all ages up until the first half. I think once the first half concludes, then the movie goes into a couple more cliche routes. But Overall, I think that Ryan Reynolds, much like Will Smith in Aladdin, they make or break the movie. Like, they knew that if they had that actor, you would always get something that is charming, that is entertaining. And I feel like that Rhyme City was genius because not only does that set for a great movie here, and it justifies, like, why aren't the Pokemon, you know, with Pokeballs and things like that, but they can do stuff. They can do whatever they want after this movie because you have Rhyme City that is just open world stuff, or you can also do follow-up movies that are based on Pokemon being inside Pokeballs because you're going outside the city. Then maybe you can combine those things together. But I think that they did such a good job that I really want them to do another Pokemon movie in the near future in a maybe more regular format. I wouldn't want them to do the Kanto region stuff just because I feel like we've had enough Kanto region stuff that I don't think it would be able to meet our expectations. It's just like that high. It's don't even try.
Yeah, you have to tell a different story than just go to town A, get a badge, go to town B, get a badge. Yeah. They need to come up with a more interesting plot in mixing in Pokemon battles along the way.
And now time for a movie break. Keith, talk to us about this Stardew Valley, this video game that's been out for a couple of years
this
now.
This is an intervention, Keith.
I can't stop playing Stardew Valley. It's been like 6 weeks now, and
how's
I
your
just
want to
work on my farm. Oh, my farm's doing so good. I'm building a brewery. I'm making about 200 bottles of wines a week. Bunch of pale ale.
Amazon Prime.
I'm working on my bee farm now. I want to have this section in the middle that's all beehives so I can make mead.
Did you add a lot of hops in your brewery?
Oh, I got so many hops. I got like a year's worth of hops just sitting there for me to turn into pale ale. I'm almost done the community center. I'm hoping that once the community center's done and I'm done my bee farm, this game will release its grip from me because I want to play other things, but I can't not see this through at this point. I'm making like $300,000 a week and I'm just buying upgrades and I can't stop. I just can't stop playing Stardew Valley. I just love it so much.
Was it an easy game for you to get into? Because it's something that my wife and I are contemplating getting into because,
run
you know,
away.
They have multiplayer stuff. Oh,
run
really?
Away.
Really?
Run away.
Oh, no.
It's too easy
to get
into.
I should have got the Switch version because I got it for Steam, but it seems like it's way better on the Switch. Is that what you have it on?
I have it on both the PC and the Switch. I enjoy it on the Switch just because it's a really good portable game on
the
Switch.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Where you can kind of play 1 or 2 days and then put it down and go do something else.
It's a great,
and do
like sitting on your couch while the TV's on type of game.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, the PC version has mods, which does make the game better and adds more replayability. But I think one of its biggest strengths is the fact it's so easy to get into. It basically, you're hit the ground running, it tells you exactly what you need to do, and the loop is so fun and addicting in this game that I love it so much. It's constantly plant things, build things, get money from things, then build more things, then you're building you're planning out a farm and trying to make everything perfect and min-maxing everything. I have a kid.
Wow,
what's his name?
You have a dog?
I do have I have a cat.
A cat.
And I have a horse.
Wow. So are you going to move out to Saskatchewan and start your own farm someday?
Yeah, me and Brock Lesnar.
Oh, yeah. And now, Aladdin. This is a movie that I saw yesterday as of this recording. And it's one of my wife's favorite movies of all time. Not only did I watch the animated one, I actually watched the Broadway show a couple of years ago in New York. And I loved it. And I'm not a Broadway person. I've watched like theatrical plays and things like that, and they're cool, but I love the Broadway one.
I didn't see Broadway, but I saw the road team performance in Boston. I saw a couple months ago, and I'm not a musical person either, and I enjoyed it way more than I thought I would.
Right? And for me, I actually think that was way better than the movie, because with the movie, and I don't know how was it for you, Ryan, and I know, Keith, you haven't watched it yet, but it is worth watching.
I refuse.
But it definitely confirmed my speculation about these movies are not there to replace the original ones. They're there to make money, let's be perfectly honest, and to be a live-action alternative to the animated one.
And to like reaffirm their intellectual property.
Absolutely, because Will Smith is the only reason worth watching with this movie. Him and Jasmine are maybe the stronger of the two characters. I thought that Will Smith added the undeniable charm he has, you know, from the TV shows and things like that. We talked about Men in Black recently, and that's a really good example of what he excels at. So when talking about, you know, Robin Williams' legendary performance and how Will Smith, you know, was able to pay tribute yet also add his unique taste to it, I think that worked out really well. But then when you go to Jafar, who's the antagonist, he's the bad guy, I thought that he was miscast, way too soft-spoken, he was kind of lame and non-threatening, and I'm like, you're the reason that I'm supposed to feel like, you know, scaredness or fear, anxiety, but every time he was on screen, I'm like, can somebody get a real actor? Like, no offense to the guy, because I don't know what his previous stuff was, I don't know if it was maybe lack of direction or something, but he was so dull and boring. And then I would say that Aladdin was not at that bad level, but he was forgettable. Like, you could have easily put most people in the role of Aladdin, and they would have done about as good as the actor did here. And for somebody that's also supposed to be charming, and you're supposed to enamor this princess, I really didn't feel it. I thought that was a little too artificial for me.
Yeah, I agree on the performances completely. Yeah, it just felt like Jafar. It was just like a dude. It was like a cosplay is what it felt like. It didn't feel like, oh, this is Jafar. And yeah, Aladdin, especially, I felt the beginning was very rough. It felt kind of awkward at times. A lot of these scenes, I didn't really feel the, like, the tone or the emotion of the scene that well. And some of the sets, especially early on to me, felt like I was watching the play almost. Some of the sets just felt weird. They didn't feel lived in, like they were actual places in the world. They definitely did a lot better with things like the Cave of Wonders and things like that. But some of those early sets, just they didn't feel real. They just felt like if you pushed a wall, it would like fall down and you would see like workers like, you
especially
know,
when Aladdin
it.
Was climbing over stuff. I thought those initial shots were pretty.
Yeah. And I know you didn't have as much of a problem with this, but the slowdowns and the speed ups were really jarring to me. Like, it was like the slowdowns were laughable. And then when sometimes people were dancing or they were running, they would speed up the frame rate. So it looked unnatural. And they're just like, it just looked like a little hokey. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? It just looked completely unnatural.
Yeah. The other thing I guess we should conclude with is the actual like CGI stuff, because once again, you talk about Sonic and look at the outrage with that. And then you look at Lion King and people's complaint is that they just look like lions. And yeah, that's what they're supposed to be. But we're talking about a Disney movie. You want a little bit more charm and uniqueness to the characters. I thought that Abu was actually pretty good. I think naturally you're going to lose some of that appeal that the animated one has because you're not going to be as over the top. But especially with some of the close-ups that they did, I thought that they were able to capture that magic with the magic carpet, you know, for something that doesn't have a face or anything.
The carpet was one of the best characters.
Yeah, like who would have thought, right? Just a carpet moving around makes a lot of sense. But really, my initial thought when I finished watching the movie was, I watched it. I'm glad that I did. But I would feel indifferent if I never watched it, because I didn't get anything different or better than the original. Yeah.
I think definitely the word better. They did one little tweak with Jasmine's character to sort of modernize it, and I won't spoil it or anything. But they definitely helped kind of bring it into 2019 with that. And I believe Jasmine also had a new song that was not in the original. But of the songs that were in the original and were also in this one, there was not a single one I would say that was better in this. The Disney ones all seemed a lot better. The original ones.
It seemed like a remaster where... Yeah, because they tried to just do the original ones, but slightly different, but not different enough to be unique. Just different enough to be like, oh, I still like the original. So this just kind of doesn't really do anything to me. So Keith, can you sing A Whole New World?
No.
Damn. I tried. I thought I could catch him off guard, he wouldn't like think twice about it. But that's what it is. But everybody, whenever we do these off the rail episodes, it is about this, just sort of catching up. There's a lot of stuff that usually just would not be added to an agenda. So if there's any questions, you know, we can maybe do kind of like a Q&A down the line or something.
That'd be a good idea.
Yeah. So drop questions, you know, send them email casttothepast@gmail.com, casttothepast.com/discord, or send us a tweet, cast to the past on pretty much everything. People, I think at this point we understand that, but if you would like to support the podcast, consider leaving a 5-star review, whether it's on Stitcher or Apple Podcast, and you can check us out everywhere. We have plenty of episodes available right now, including talking about Office Space, the Super Mario Brothers movie, A Link to the Past. Keep an eye out for that, because in a couple of weeks, I think that you're going to like a future episode if you like the Legend of Zelda games. And Ryan, are you excited for that? Are you ready for that?
Oh, I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah, Keith.
Oh,
you want to sing something?
No.
No? Damn! Send us off with a positive message, then.
If I could show you the world, it would be shining, shimmering, and splendid.
A cast.
To the
past.
Thank you, Keith. I truly do appreciate your deep thought process.
A whole new cast.
Tell me, princess.
It's a whole new cast.
When did you last let your heart decide?
Subscribe and enjoy the show.